Fun thing I like to do when I shake like Jeremy's hand, like the first time I met him, any like really big guy, I'll take my pointer finger and I just like lay it along the wrist. I do it to every like bodybuilding guy. Yeah, just every one of them. And I'll just kind of like take my finger on the wrist when I do it every
just
time.
Just start doing the Boy Scout handshake, the two fingers in front.
It's like a mental check, like you just to see the reaction.
Yeah, and it's just to like, you know, I'm going to get hit one of these days. Yeah. Like somebody's going to punch me, but yeah. So far, the record, you know, I'm batting 100, so.
I like it. Well, we're going to just start working class on DeerCast and like that, talking about how to
shake hands, baby.
Assert dominance through a handshake.
There you go.
I'm not sure what episode this is, but Kurt Geyer here.
Doug Schmidt.
Eric Common.
We have. I'm sorry. I was going to say our guest.
Oh, there you go. I'm Shad Vanetti.
And then we have a.
Special guest.
Special guest. Snortwee Scotty's in here. Hey, thanks for being here, man.
You're welcome.
Still not really sure about this guy. We'll figure that out.
How do you get in here?
Thanks for being here, man.
Strong westerly winds.
I think that's what it is. But this episode, we're going to chat with our good buddy Shad about some traditional archery. You're known in the WCB community as the trad guy for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love you, Shad, because you are a passionate human being about life in general. Hunting, of course, is how we all know you, but I mean, you're a musician, you're a passionate traditional archery guy, you're passionate about hunting, you're passionate about everything, I feel like, which is
runs 400 miles a day.
Yeah,
not a day.
Yeah, but it seems like it. So thanks for doing this, man.
No problem, man. Thanks for having me.
Where are you from?
I'm from Terre Haute, Indiana.
You made the jaunt all the way to the studio.
Yeah, man. In strong headwinds. It was a battle.
It's bad today. I'm glad I filled my tag because I don't want to be hunting
right now.
No, absolutely not. Would not be any fun.
Yeah,
that's why you hunt from the ground.
The spikes are safe from me today. So
right.
Took a day off.
I'm checking to see if Snortwee Scotty's going to break here.
Nope.
What character?
You already broke it.
Yeah. What character?
This isn't a character.
It's a lifestyle.
This is the way I live.
Okay. Good.
Good enough.
Shad, talk about trad archery. So we've, as of recently, we've had some controversy in the WCB world. It seems like more so from the trad community because of a photo that was posted of a deer that got eaten by coyotes. If you follow us at all, by the time this launches, it's hopefully just blown over and everybody's happy now. But a lot of them aren't happy. I learned most of it is trad guys. Yeah. And you're a part of the trad community, but you don't necessarily... I don't see you as being like a typical trad guy. Does that make sense? I'm trying to say it without being offensive, like on accident.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I love traditional bow hunting. Interest in archery. I've been doing it since 1993.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't really fall into any group mindset of anything.
I get you. Yeah.
I don't really fall into groupthink, even with you guys. Like, mm-hmm. right? Like, I just don't. It's not who I am. Maybe it's too much punk rock ethos of the early 1980s.
But we love that. That's what we love about you, though.
I don't know, but I just don't. I think any crowd has a group mentality, and you have to like kind of break away from that, or mm-hmm. you lose your ability to think.
Mm-hmm. For sure. So, I mean, we see that now with political parties and all that.
It's with everything.
So, I mean, do you get crap from the traditional community because of that, or have you?
I more so in 2018. I picked up a compound again for the first time since 1993, and there was some people that I cared about. I cared about their opinions, I guess, a little bit too much.
Mm-hmm.
Who were very upset about the fact that I started shooting a compound again. But
I could see that.
I was bored with shooting traditional archery. I mean, I've been doing it forever. I enjoy doing it, but I needed a new challenge.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not like you're dropping it altogether.
No, I still love it. I mean, I still
That's wild.
I shoot recurves or longbows. I mean, almost every day. Mm-hmm. I shoot almost every day. And I've got a wall of them. I'll just grab one. I'll shoot it for a bit, and I might pick up a compound. But I think that in life, if you don't try to grow and change and do other challenging things, then you're just stagnant. You're not learning. Yeah. You're not moving forward. And I was bored with it. And mm-hmm. I shot a compound again for the first time in 2018, and it wasn't easy. Yeah. It wasn't like I thought, like I had,
like you just jump back into it as normal.
What I remember, yeah. Well, the bows have changed a lot since, right. You know.
You look at a
compound from the early 90s that might be, you know, 46, 48 inches long axle to axle.
Yeah, yeah.
To now, and you know, you could, when I quit shooting a compound, I shot it with fingers.
Solid, yeah. Oh yeah, that too, but like solid riser, solid limbs, yeah, and just, they did, all did look
you,
the same.
Did you like not shoot one at all, or would you like go to a bow shop and shoot one around every once in a while?
The only time I picked one up in that amount of time, Joe Humphries actually has a picture of it.
He documented it?
Yeah, he thought it was hilarious. Because I was getting a Diamond Infinite Edge, I think was the name of it, for my son Chase.
Yeah, my wife used to have that bow.
And we were, when Gander had an indoor shooting range, mm-hmm. and he told me to shoot it. I was like, all right. So he gave me the little release, and I put it on, and it was just the most weird thing that I'd had. I haven't shot one of those.
Right. Because it's not right.
So you're correct. It's not.
It's not.
Well, what is this contraption?
Yeah.
It wouldn't feel right. What are all these extra cables and strings
this
for?
Newfangled wizardry.
That's like stop driving a car now and then drive one in 20 years and see how much different it is.
Well, I don't know if it's the same comparison, but I get what you're saying.
Or like a car from the 80s to now.
Yeah. Right. Okay. That's a better comparison. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. Imagine going from like a Ford Pinto and then getting in a Tesla.
Right.
I want that Pinto.
Oh, well, I give it respect. Like an old Cutlass is one of my style.
Yeah.
You know, but I get that a little bit. So I love that Joe had to document it.
Yeah. He ate that up pretty good. And he was
classic
with me.
Joe.
He was with me the day that I bought my first compound again. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know I was going to buy one that day. We were at our mutual friend Josh McDaniel's shop.
Yeah, yeah.
And he just happened to have a used bow that I liked. And I shot it, and I was like, I'm taking this home with me.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe about flipped, because it was not in the script that day to go down there.
Weren't like going to the bow shop and be like, hey, I'm going to buy a compound today.
No, we were actually taking a pallet of Big Tine down there for them. So for the shop to sell.
Mm-hmm.
And it just happened to be one of those days. And I brought it back home with me, and he was speechless for me. I didn't have a release. I didn't have, like, I didn't even have anything to shoot from this.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't have arrows that were spined heavy enough to shoot from it or anything. I was just like, yeah, that's what I'm going to buy.
Yeah.
And
just
so
went for it.
And everything else that goes with the compound.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, that was at the beginning of September, and, decided I was going to take it out hunting that year because I had fun shooting it. I got heavy broadheads to shoot out of it. And, had a good year. Killed three deer with it, and I missed the first deer I shot at with it. I missed, which I started laughing because it was like 16 yards,
right?
And I was like, I can miss just as easy with this as I do with a longbow. This is amazing.
It's amazing. He was excited about it.
I was laughing. I texted Joe.
I'm like, mad.
Yeah. And then, I mean, it wasn't 15 minutes later. Had a buck walk by and put a perfect shot on it, and it was just like, wow, this is. It was still fun. It was just like when I first started shooting archery again.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And it's hard for me. The target panic that comes along with it, just the holding on target. Like, I'm not used to doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And even, you know, here we are 3 years later, I'm still not used to doing, like, I have to work through steps every time I go to shoot one.
It's cool seeing you with the compound, but I like how you're still so passionate, because we do the annual working class bow hunter shoot. Yeah. And we've talked about this before in the past, but you're like the guy who has all these trad bows, and people are like scared to touch them.
Yeah.
And you're like, you want to shoot it? And people are like, oh no, I'll never. No, I'm good. I don't want to shoot. You're like, no, let's go shoot it.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're just bows, man. They're supposed to be shot.
Nobody touches my stuff.
Snorty Scotty is cold blooded.
No. All right. Get your own.
Well,
get
your own. I expected you to have a little more positive attitude.
No.
Oh, you're just stone cold serious all the time, huh?
Yeah.
This isn't a joke to you?
No.
Okay.
What, did you kill your deer out of a deer stand too? Hunting over a food plot.
Okay.
I did all the cheating
wheels
stuff.
Now,
Scotty, with all due respect, Snort Weave Scotty. Sorry, I didn't mean to come at you. Looked out your full name.
Apologize.
Don't use this government name.
That's right. You apologize.
A little aggressive.
Better put a mister in front of that.
Mr. Snortweed Scotty. I might have to mute your mic if you keep it up. You know, with all due respect, I think we should let Shad talk as a guest.
Show some respect, you know.
I think that'd be the best thing.
Whatever, dude.
Okay, good. But it's cool. Like, bows are meant to be shot, but I think people want to shoot them, but they're like bashful or they're nervous. But you're like, no, let's go shoot them. Let's try them out. And I think people have a blast with that.
Well, it's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
People, I mean, ultimately, the reason we do all this stuff is because it's fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, we take it seriously. I take it very seriously. You guys take it very seriously.
Of course, yeah.
The reason we practice so much is because the animals that we pursue, we want to do as cleanly and effectively as possible.
Of course.
So, I mean, all my practice is I practice for hunting, mm-hmm. like, all the time. That's the whole reason I'm doing it. So I do take it seriously, but it's still fun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's a lot of fun. I've never lost that youthful enthusiasm of shooting a bow.
Mm-hmm. And you make it comfortable for people if they've never shot them before. Because I've shot them before, but never, like, I didn't know what I was doing.
Didn't feel like a doofus.
Yeah, you feel like a doofus. You're like, I don't know what to do with my hands. And yeah, then the first time I shot one with you, you're like, okay, try this. And then you actually, like, feel comfortable enough. You're like, okay, this actually feels right. And yeah, I kind of know what I'm doing now.
Yeah, it's not as hard as people think it is.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and there's a lot of people, especially now, that have never shot a traditional bow.
A lot of them. I'd say the majority still. I mean, right? Wouldn't you say?
A lot of the people coming up now, for sure. I mean, maybe the traditional archery world has started to blow up again a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit more recognized, but, you know, 10 years ago, probably not.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, there's people who've never handled one. They don't know anything about it. And if you know how to shoot a compound bow, it's not too hard to change that into shooting a traditional bow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's the same steps. It's anchor, form, you know, clean release. It's
right. And then one thing you mentioned earlier too is, like, you're passionate about everything, but you said there's a lot of things that, you know, you're a really good friend, but we all don't. I mean, not that we disagree with you on this, but what I'm saying is I appreciate this about you is that, like, the caliber of deer that you hunt is really anything.
It's whatever gets me excited. Mm-hmm. It's not based on antler size. It's not based on doe or buck. It's not based on any. It's if it gets me excited,
mm-hmm.
then that's the one that I'm about. And I'm you know, a little bit older than some of you guys, and I've been doing this for a really long time. Just like you guys started out really early.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of hit, you know, the five stages of sportsmanship, and I kind of went through those really fast where I didn't really, once the trophy stage, you know.
What are the five stages? Do you know them?
I could look them up. I remember them. I've had to go through them 1,000 times because I put all the kids through hunter education classes.
Let me see.
When?
There's a limiting out stage.
Be number one.
Be number one.
That's the only.
Grip and grins, baby.
Yeah.
Spoon and crock pot.
That sounds right.
That's my club.
Five.
I'll be a part of it. Lucky. Lucky to have me.
Dang. Cold blood. I don't know if this is hunter-ed.com. Shooting stage, limiting out stage, yes. Trophy stage, method stage, sportsman stage.
Yes. So, are you looking at the description of them all?
Yeah, I wanted to see if they had it.
That's just the stages again.
Anyway, I just thought it might be interesting to read it, see what it says. But I do appreciate that about you. Like, yeah, whatever gets you excited, because we kind of have a joke in the WCB community is like, that's a shad buck.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think is cool.
And most of the time they are. Most of the time I'm in.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's, I love to figure out big bucks, and I like to get close to them. My biggest thing when it comes to bow hunting is I want to see how close I can get to an animal without them knowing I'm there.
Yeah, 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 right.
And I love that. I mean, I absolutely love it. I don't care if I don't shoot very many deer.
Mm-hmm.
If I shoot a deer, then I don't get to go hunt the next day. And I like hunting more than I like killing. And anymore, my big thing has been I've been trying to shoot, like, big, really big does.
Mm-hmm.
I love.
Well, because if you can beat a big doe, you can beat about any animal, especially a big white-tailed doe, you know?
You shoot a really big doe in mid to late October and get within their comfort range of 15 yards and in. You've done something.
Yeah,
like, a big buck can walk in front of you during the rut and not even think
twice
about it.
He's not even thinking about what he's doing sometimes, yeah.
But, you know, and even in late season, I mean, I shot a really big doe. This was in 2018. It was the last weekend of Indiana's archery season. So I think it's the beginning of January, end of December. I don't remember the exact date. Shot it from 8 yards on the ground.
See, that's awesome.
That was, like, I was more proud about that than you know, any of the bigger deer that I've killed.
Because that was not only that, it gets you jacked up when you're on the ground, man.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, I pulled up the, just because for sake of conversation here, and I think it's interesting, stage one, the shooter stage. Hunters at this stage simply wanted to do a lot of shooting, be it doves, ducks, squirrels, rabbits, or even deer. They want to test their shooting abilities as well as that of their rifle or shotgun. These hunters are beginners and are often young as well. Limiting out stage, eventually simply burning through a lot of ammunition is no longer sufficient. Hunters at this stage still gain a lot of satisfaction, gee whiz, from shooting, but now the hunter or birds or animals bag becomes important too, and limiting out or filling a tag is the gold standard. Trophy stage, from quantity to quality, hunters at this stage gain satisfaction from being selective and taking game, such as a duck hunter only shoots greenheads, a turkey hunter only shoots longbeards, or a deer hunter only takes mature bucks.
Doug, is that true?
These hunters often travel a long distance to hunt trophy animals.
Yep.
I mean, I think some of you can always stay a little in the trophy stage.
Yeah. They're all trophies, man.
Right. Well, it depends. Yeah, it's the individual.
I've got a shirt that says that.
I love that shirt. Method stage. Taking game is still important, but more important is how the game is taken. So that kind of falls into some of the guys that do different traditional archery or trying different ways to take an animal, which is cool.
See, I don't need no shirt that says that.
You are. You say that.
I show my size.
Your body says it.
I'm a trophy.
Your body says Spoon and Crockett. And
that's
then
what's up.
The sportsman stage. Basically, the emphasis on the total hunting experience and being outdoors, enjoying the company of friends and family, and seeing nature and all its beauty. I think you can accompany all of these stages a little bit. I think you fall out of the limiting out stage and the shooter stage a little bit and more into 3, 4, and 5 as you mature.
For sure.
A blend of the three, you know?
Yeah.
Which I think is fair.
Yeah,
I agree with that. I think that's pretty accurate, the 5 stages of sportsmanship. I think that's actually cool. You know, I've seen this before, but I forgot about
I've actually never heard about it.
You never have?
No.
I like it. It makes sense because I think...
Doug doesn't read a lot, though.
Well, Doug also hasn't thought about having kids and stuff. And the sportsman stage, a big part never. About having kids and
I wouldn't.
Hunting with kids.
I haven't crossed my mind once.
It's not for me. Never, ever.
I heard if you get kids, you shoot crossbows.
Jeez.
That's why I'm scared to have one. That's why I won't.
That's why I'm scared to have. Have you ever shot, going from compound traditional, have you ever messed around with a crossbow or anything?
Never once.
No. I'm scared of them.
I don't have a problem with the weapon.
Yeah.
I have a problem with them being in archery only seasons. I think
for the full length.
Yeah. I think they are they're an awesome weapon.
For sure, yeah.
But it's not a bow.
I agree with you. Yeah, I think
if that it's not being held by the power of the arm and the hand, it's not a bow.
Yeah, I think this is controversial, but I don't think they should go away. I think they should have a season.
No, for sure.
Right? Yeah. Even if it's a 20-day season, I'm fine with that. But as long as it's got to have some sort of regulation. Yeah. But it's great for one episode we did for WCNDC. Chris Zieger, he shot a really good buck this year in Ohio with a crossbow, but he. He had a big major shoulder injury.
He was shooting his bow and
he was shooting his compound. His shoulder tore apart.
Yeah. I listened to that one.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
Cause it's like,
there's a big difference though, between somebody who for instance, like that. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then, an able bodied, you know, mid 30s male
mm-hmm.
who doesn't want to take the time to learn how to effectively shoot archery equipment.
Right. Yeah.
And that's the whole reason the archery seasons were established and the length that they were was because archery is supposed to be hard. Bow hunting is supposed to be hard.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's also what makes it fun. And when you do kill one or you find success on whatever you consider that to be, it's so good.
Yeah. And if you don't want to take the time to do that, then don't hunt during bow season.
Yeah.
Hunt with a gun. And there's nothing wrong with it, but it's just, you know, we have these lengthy established seasons for those reasons.
Right.
So.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm with you on that. I mean, there's a lot of people that disagree, and that's fine. Like, you know, that's cool.
Maybe that's an unpopular opinion segment.
I would say 50-50.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
It's a 50-50 unpopular opinion. I think at the same time, you'll have a lot of guys be like, hey, it's a good way to get people into hunting. I agree with that. That's definitely a benefit. I think it's a good way to get kids into hunting. That's definitely a benefit. Different ways to look at it on that.
People with injuries.
People with injuries. That kids and injuries, by all means, I get it. But it's a debatable topic, regardless of what your opinion is on it. It's a fairly debatable topic, I think.
And I think, you know, that just because that's my opinion, and this is, you guys will understand this, just because it's my opinion doesn't mean that it should be everybody's opinion.
Right. Mm-hmm. That'd be a problem if it was.
I choose to not partake in that, mm-hmm. right? So it's, I guess I'm kind of hinting around at some other things. It's when you make your opinion, you try to force that on everybody else's because you think that's right.
Yeah.
It's not my place over there. Yeah, it's not my place to say how you receive your enjoyment in the woods.
Right. Scotty's sorry again, Snartweed. Scotty's face is getting a little red over there. I feel like
my way is the way.
Well, I mean, it's warm in here too, and he's used to being outside with no sleeves on.
Yeah, so on the ground in the wind.
Yeah, yeah.
Snartweed, Scotty. No offense, but you are exactly the hunters that nobody likes on social media.
Yeah, I don't really care.
It's so, to a T. Snartweed, Scotty.
Don't really care.
Yeah. Don't really care.
Don't faze me. I don't have Facebook.
My opinion is the best opinion. Your opinion sucks.
Okay. That right there is a problem with a lot of things in hunting, like on Facebook, on anything.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
It's in no matter what community you're in. That's where social media is amazing. And then it's that Snartway Scotty's attitude is also what makes it not so fun.
Mm-hmm.
Like we've learned really recently in the last few days of recording this on the internet, but that's fine. You know, everybody has an opinion. That's cool.
For sure.
But you know, and people are passionate about what they're into,
mm-hmm.
but it's like the line of like, yeah, you're passionate about a lot of things, but I think you have the right balanced mindset of like, just cause I'm so passionate about it. You're passionate about running. Mm-hmm. Snartway Scotty ain't running.
No, he don't run from anything.
Why?
No.
Why would you?
No.
Right.
It's I don't even know why I do.
But,
unless I'd be running.
I don't get it either. Run too much.
For sure.
But you know what I mean? It's one of those, I don't know. I don't know where we're going with that. But anyway, I love the traditional idea, and it's something I definitely want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I there's some stuff I want to get done first. Yes.
Right.
You're on the same page?
Yeah. And I almost... So I was this close today to bringing you Gramps.
Really?
Because you're tagged out with bucks, right?
Mm-hmm.
What better time to take a, you know, to take a longbow out?
Yeah.
It's late season, you know, find a food source, see if you can get a doe within 15 yards.
Mm-hmm.
Shad, me and you don't agree on anything, but I agree on that right now.
Yeah. Right. And now. Even then you're conflicted with agreeing with me. Yeah, I get it.
You're mad about agreeing with him?
Right. I'm conflicted with my own self most of the time. So
I you know, that would be a ton of fun.
We're all a little confused.
Really, when it boils down to it, we're all a little lost, aren't we? I would love to go out and shoot a doe with a recurve
over there.
It's honestly, it's like I wouldn't have the time to put into it.
Yeah.
Sherrard's burning down.
Man.
Or Sherrard, Windsor.
New Windsor. No. It's crazy out there in the street.
I didn't know where I am. Too much coffee.
Snartweed Scotty's got to get out of here.
He got a little nervous.
That would have made the whole episode if he would have left in a panic.
Gotta go.
Gotta go. I gotta leave. Game warden.
Fire truck goes by. I'm a volunteer firefighter. I gotta go.
Yeah. But I think it would be a blast to try, and I will probably one day.
Yeah. Oh, I'll for sure try it someday.
Like, I think one day I'll commit to like how Chandler did last year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Chandler committed to traditional archery last year and I think surprised a lot of people.
I mean, yes and no. Like, so, and that's what, when him and I were talking about it, when he first approached me about shooting, you know, going bow hunting with traditional equipment, I was like,
yeah.
What's your average shot? Do you think your average yardage is on deer? And he's like...
Like in general, like with the compound?
Yeah, like on average. He goes, 17 yards. I go, you're there.
Mm-hmm.
You've already got the hard part figured out. The hard part is getting close, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So if you already know how to get close to deer, the rest of it's just, you know, practicing. Shooting. Yeah. You got to practice for sure, but you've already eliminated half of that variable.
That's a good point because, I mean, yeah, being in the wheelhouse... But I think a lot of guys, that's hard for them to do consistently.
Yeah, yeah.
Or to do it to where you're not going to burn yourself out.
That's where woodsmanship comes into play, though.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's... Back again to bow hunting, you know, it's supposed to be hard. Mm-hmm. This is where you learn woodsmanship. It's...
Yep.
We all know that it's not that difficult to get within 80 yards of big animals.
Mm-hmm.
It's really not.
Yeah.
I mean, you can say that it is... But it's really not.
You can accidentally get within 100 yards of a big buck.
It's not that hard.
Mm-hmm.
To consecutively get within 30 and under of deer and them not know you're there. I mean, you're going to get busted every now and then.
Of course, yeah.
But to have a sense of woodsmanship to where you're looking at the wind all the time. You're figuring your routes in and out of mm-hmm. places. You're not over hunting areas. You're not doing, you know, to look at this and to watch how the seasons change and how the animals change with the seasons and where they're going. I mean, that's part of this, mm-hmm, right? So
that's why people get so attached to hunting and like, I don't know, when I hunt a piece of property and get to learn the property and have like experience on it, there's something going on in New Windsor. I get like attached, you know, to the property a little bit because mm-hmm. you kind of like, I don't know, you like sort of have, does that make sense?
Yeah.
You kind of have like an emotional like relationship with the ground you're on.
For sure. For sure. I mean, there's a bit of land I used to be able to hunt. The landowner recently passed, well, a couple years ago passed away. And man, there's so many firsts on that land.
Mm-hmm.
I can't go back there anymore. It's under new ownership, right?
But right.
There's not a time that I don't drive by there and just be like, my wife took her first deer back there. I, you know, killed my first deer with a longbow back there.
Yeah.
My son's first turkey was back there. One of my last deer hunts ever with my grandfather mm-hmm. was back there. You know, there's just so many really, really cool things that were on
good
that.
Memories.
And they're never going to disappear. The memories. Anytime I drive past there, I've got stories for days.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. But you just wish you could go through there still.
Yeah, I wish. I mean, it's, you know, I get emotional talking about that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's, this really means a lot to me. And it's part of the reason why I try to promote what we do in such a positive way.
Mm-hmm.
I want to show people the good side of this stuff.
Definitely.
You know?
100%. Yeah.
So it's why I want people to try to shoot a bow. It's why mm-hmm. I want to take people out in the woods. It's why I was like, man, this stuff's really cool.
Yeah,
it never stops being cool.
Mm-hmm.
It
mm-hmm.
changes every day. It's never the same.
Definitely. Yeah. Have you ever thought about doing any sort of like classes to get people into archery or anything like that?
No, because then it becomes a job.
Okay.
Yeah.
I get that.
Yeah.
And it's much like, you know, trying to become a professional musician or anything like that. Like I do, everything I do is because it's from my soul.
Yeah.
And I'm passionate about it and I love it. And if I have to get paid for it or I'm trying to turn it into some form of employment, then it's
ruins it for you.
Yeah. That's why I don't shoot in archery contests. I mean, if it wasn't for the fact like the races that I run, it's just an excuse to go out and run in the woods with my friends
mm-hmm.
for a day. But I don't go out there to try to win them.
Right,
I'm going out there to like
have fun.
To go run 100 miles through the woods with my friends.
That is wild, man.
It's just how I look at it. It's how I look at that stuff.
I get that. And that's probably like why you enjoy hanging out at the bow shoot we do, because it's like you're just doing your thing. You're not really obligated.
I don't even hardly shoot at those things.
Which I think is cool because you're worried about other people shooting.
Yeah. I mean, the first one I came to, I shot. That was, but I didn't shoot at all last year.
Yeah.
I think I shot at the practice bells a couple times just to show people how to like mm-hmm. hold the bow, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
we barely get to shoot them. We ran through a couple times, but we split up and all that.
So. Yeah, I have more fun walking around with you guys handing out prizes and getting people to do, you know, silly crap than
I know we're gonna
do shooting
that.
Myself.
that was
fun. Yeah,
we normally do drawings for the giveaways. And I liked walking around on the
that
course.
That was so fun.
It was a blast because people are like, "What? You're giving me this?" I'm like, "Yeah, you're here."
It's a lot better too than just drawing a name out of the hat and be like, "Here you go." Like, you get a group of people. Hey, whoever gets the closest.
Yeah, when we
wins throw shot prize. Competitions out, just makes archery fun.
Yep. Yeah, that's what it should be. And like, I think it was like that. Was there a carp or something? There was one target that we had on the string.
On a zip line,
we were trying to get people to shoot it at the same time.
Uh-huh.
That was a blast, man. That's fun stuff. Or
Kurt just gave that little girl the rangefinder. I was like, you shoot that? She's like, yeah, it's my ear. I was like, good shot. She's like, what?
Uh-huh. I mean, that's fun, you know?
Yeah.
It's awesome. Funny watching like the parents get more stoked about like, oh my God, that's a loophole rangefinder, you know? And
shout out to Dad, you need a new rangefinder? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
For your daughter.
Dad was smiling.
It's not yours.
The kid has no idea what it is.
No. I mean, I'm sure it was a younger girl. She's going to learn real quick.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure she's, as she gets older, or maybe next year, I know she's a good shot.
Yeah.
She's shooting her bow. It was cool to see, man.
That was,
it's all right.
Man, I had
cold-blooded over there.
That was probably my favorite thing, was to see all the kids out there this year.
Yeah.
There was
a lot more kids.
Man, I love seeing kids shoot archery.
Yeah.
Especially girls, because you don't see a lot of them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's really refreshing. I mean, because if we don't, this dies if we don't keep it going.
It'll die fast.
Yeah. I mean, you have to have the youth involved.
It's gonna die with me.
Don't talk.
The strong words.
It's scary though, because the way, and a lot of it, it sucks that it boils back down to politics, because it kind of does, because that's politics is what would end hunting,
right?
Yeah, really. For sure.
But that's, you have to just get, it's like a traditional thing, like tradition in life, and it's because it's a lifestyle. But you know, my daughter, maybe she won't want to hunt, but I'm gonna throw archery at her. If it sticks, cool. Yeah. If not, that's fine. But all you can do is try and get them into it and let them have fun.
Yeah.
That's
right. I mean, between my wife and I, we have 5 children together, mm-hmm. Ranging from 25 to 15 years old.
Mm-hmm.
They've all shot. They all shoot. They all can shoot.
Yeah.
Chase is the only one that's ever, you know, killed a deer with a bow.
Mm-hmm.
My son Brennan has tried. Most of them, it didn't stick with them, right? They'll still do it.
Yeah.
But right. They have a lot, like their entire youth was us going to our vacations, because when you have 5 children together, like, you don't have a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah.
Our vacations were going to traditional shoots and camping out at them.
And oh, that's
we'd
cool.
go there for like 3 or 4 days. And the kids, you know, they'll never forget that stuff.
Yeah.
Right, right.
And it's, they were just running around with their friends and shooting arrows, and
that's awesome.
Having a blast, right?
Yeah.
We camped through some crazy storms during that stuff, and they learned that you can, like, you can survive through these things.
Right, right.
And
it's a good, like, wholesome way to, like, raise kids, I feel like.
I mean, they, you know? There was some debauchery that goes on, like, at any, like, you know, they probably saw me get drunk on moonshine way too many times.
Well, hey,
yeah, brother. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
Who hasn't seen their dad drunk on moonshine, let's be honest?
Yeah, I don't know.
In the Midwest.
Yeah.
That's true.
That's a family vacation without that.
Yeah. Let's take a poll. I for sure have. Doug?
I don't think on moonshine, but.
Well, you seem to get pretty drunk.
Yeah, I've seen him get drunk.
Eric?
Oh, yeah.
What about you?
Every weekend.
Yeah.
It's the only way I go hunting, too.
Oh.
A couple good poles and go out in the woods, baby.
That's how you stay warm without the sleeves on, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So stupid. I'm, like, mildly regret having Snarly Scotty on this podcast.
Yeah, I can't stop. I keep looking at him. Can't stop smiling.
Life's full of regrettable things.
I'm learning real fast.
Yes, you are.
It's like, you already broke character like 5 seconds
no,
in.
So. No, he didn't.
No.
Oh, that's just how, it's just you.
I just like to laugh.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, Shad, what do we cover from here, man? Because I just, you're a good dude, man. We wanted you on here to just speak positivity from traditional equipment to just life in general. But you're a good dude to have in the group, because you're always like positive vibes. And yeah, I've never seen you bummed.
I go there.
I know you do. Everybody does.
I go there.
But when we're together, it's always good vibes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I just, you know, I love this stuff, man. Mm-hmm. Like, I do. And I hope that resonates to others. Like, I want them to see that this stuff's really fun.
Yeah.
And you don't have to be so, you don't have to be serious about it.
Yeah. You don't have to stress yourself out with it.
No. And it's.
Look at me.
You're relaxed. Well, big deer stress people out, I think.
They do. Big deer are, on my way here, I was talking, once again, talking to Joe Humphreys on the phone. You know,
shout out to Joe.
I've got really bad, I make bad choices in best friends, and he's one of them.
And, I can see that.
Yeah, that's a real bad choice.
But, you know, here we are, you know.
Yeah.
We've made a really bad marriage work really good for a long period of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the best way to live.
Yeah. So, but we were discussing things, and I used to think that mushroom hunters were like, the worst, right? Like, you know, mushroom hunters don't care about property lines.
No, they don't.
I mean, they, you know, and
I like searching for mushrooms, but I have a theory about mushroom hunters.
Yeah, I mean, I've had so many turkey hunts.
If
ruined.
A mushroom hunter smokes Marlboro Reds, they find all the mushrooms.
That's science.
That ain't
though.
No joke.
That's science.
That ain't no joke.
I'm not saying it's a fact, but just
it
look
is
it up.
A fact.
Do the scientific research on it.
But I mean, anymore, it's deer hunting and big bucks has just became so weird. Like, it makes friends hate each other. Yeah. It's
neighbors, yeah.
You know,
friends.
Like, oh, for instance, when Garrett, you know, his buck got stolen.
Yeah.
My other best friend, Tubby, mm-hmm. same situation happened to him this year.
Really?
He shot a really nice buck from about 10 yards on the ground with one of my recurves. Mm-hmm. He shoots traditional all the time. And he wanted to borrow one of my bows this year and hunt with it, and wanted to change his, you know, his shooting up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And midday, early November, he was, you know, weaseling through a thicket, just doing some midday scouting, looking for a place to maybe move a stand to.
Mm-hmm.
And this really big buck came just strolling through 10 yards. Didn't know he was there. put a good shot on it. It must have been just a little bit back because the deer ran about 250 yards before it crossed the property line.
Mm-hmm.
The property owner he hunts on contacted the other property owner. They wouldn't let him come on to get it.
No kidding.
And then they ended up hearing, you know, them come up with side-by-sides into the area where that deer.
After they got the call, they went and checked.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. And the guy wouldn't let him go back there because it was a few days before Indiana's firearm season started. He said, no, I've got stands back there. Gun season comes on Saturday. I don't want anybody walking back there. And he's like, man, we just want to go recover our deer.
Mm-hmm. So
like,
Indiana, you had to have permission.
Oh, yeah.
Illinois is the same way.
Yeah, there's been deer that I've not been
able to retrieve. I remember that phone call.
Because of that. You were that guy?
Yeah.
So...
same in Michigan too. That was mine too.
That was me. They wouldn't let him go get it.
No.
So they went and got his deer, and then what?
Nothing. Nothing happens from it.
I can.
You can't. You can't even
go grab my deer for me and just let me have it.
You know they. I was like, when Tubby was calling me and talking to me, I was like, dude, offer him $100. Just offer him a trespassing fee.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, no. It's not. They wouldn't go for it.
It's just mind blowing that he said, "I don't want anyone in there." But then they go drive side by side in there and just blow it all out and take a deer out.
The problem I think with it was when the landowner that Tubby was hunting on mentioned that he'd shot a nice buck, and I think that's what started it all. Right? If he just said he shot a doe, probably wouldn't have been
things got shot weird
as big of a deal.
A deer,
yeah. But you know, then it got weird, right? Mm-hmm, and the bad part about this is that the people that they were trying to get on, they just bought that property this year. Well, there's going to come a time when they're going to shoot an animal and it's going to cross property lines, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, then you come into the conflict of like,
do you be a dick about it?
Yeah, or not, because you don't, I mean, you're never going to get that deer back, even if you,
right.
You know.
And you don't want to have that relationship with a property neighbor.
No.
That's a bad way to start it. That's a bummer, man. That bums me out to hear.
Yeah, it happens, I mean.
More than we hear about, I think.
Yeah, it's happened to me. It's the land that I was talking to you about before that the gentleman passed away. I had an episode like that where I shot a buck with a recurve, and the shot was a little bit back,
mm-hmm.
and the deer crossed a property line into a thicket.
Mm-hmm.
Landowner went. I had a dog, like, you know, mm-hmm. we had a dog who's like, it was pulling us straight there.
Yeah, beeline right to the deer.
And the guy wouldn't let us go back there and retrieve it.
So that's a bummer, man. I had a property, a guy who hunts neighboring property, shot a deer, jumped the fence onto the ground, I can hunt. And I was like, yeah, let me meet you out there. And it was a shoulder hit. I actually saw the deer alive a few weeks later. Just you could tell he'd been hitting the shoulder. I was like, let me go with you. I'll help you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I didn't want him walking around by himself because I didn't know the guy. So I'm like, yeah, I'll meet you down there. We'll help you look.
It's just,
that kind of helps them too, because if you come out there, you're like, okay, the deer jump here, you kind of know where they go.
He's probably
gonna go this way.
Well, not only that too, is like the way I thought of it is, it's like, man, if I shoot when it jumps the fence, I now have your number.
Yeah.
And hey,
you come help me,
hey, jump the fence, will you go with me?
Let's right
go. I'm not up to anything weird. I just want to find my deer.
We're all supposed to be stewards of the woods, right?
I know,
like it's just sad that that's what it's became.
I know,
when I was young it was never like that. And that's like, I hate trail to do
cams.
This. That's part of it. But I mean, I hate to throw that like back in my day kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But it's I've watched it change so much, and I don't really care for where it's went to. Like,
do you think it'll ever go back?
No.
No, you don't. No,
I don't, because so like, when if somebody say my first deer, right,
mm-hmm.
when we got on the phone and started calling people, oh shit, I got his first deer. My gramps is calling. Man, there were so many people came over to his house to like shake my hand over this doe,
mm-hmm.
right? And now you could shoot a 190-inch deer and somebody, hey, send me a picture of that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Send me a picture of it. And then nothing. Like, people used to go to, you know, you'd go to their house, you'd go hang out in their garage or their barn or
I'll
the tree
this,
outside or whatever.
When my dad killed the Geyer buck, he killed it in 2004. I remember being at the processor, checked it in, and then like they had a different location where you'd go drop the deer off from where they actually like where you check the deer. It's kind of weird setup, but it was cool because just like in a parking lot, pull in.
Because you guys had like deer check-ins, right?
I don't remember then. I don't know. I don't remember
I
exactly.
Those.
I did really.
We never
those.
Had
we
never them, had but them. I remember you someone talking about
it.
It'd
be like a
Illinois
parade going mm-hmm. through during shotgun yep. season. But this is bow season. We went to this spot. It was at the processor, so I don't know if he had to go check it in and then went to a different spot. I can't remember. I was pretty young. But I remember my dad, the guys wanted to come out and see the deer, so my dad went and dropped the tailgate. and dude, a crowd of people came up. I watched like a 90-year-old man like come over and shake my dad's hand.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of like these cool, it's like this cool moment of everyone like showing appreciation for, I mean, it's an exceptionally large deer, but it was like cool to see that. Now I don't know if that, maybe it would happen the same, but
probably
I just
wouldn't,
but I just don't see it happening the same.
I can remember like, and this wasn't even, I think Indiana got rid of theirs, maybe started getting rid of them about 10 years ago,
mm-hmm.
the check-in station somewhere. I don't
know. Yeah. Exactly. I can't remember when Illinois cut it out,
but it's, I can remember, especially opening weekend of firearm season.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you did midday. Like, people didn't really know a whole lot about hunting all day back then,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So
that was like the Facebook back then.
You'd go hang out at the check station.
Yeah, so you would come out of the woods,
go show your
grab
deer
some
off.
Lunch, and you'd swing by whatever the closest check station is just to see who's out there.
I think the gas station in the strip where our studio's at, maybe I'm mistaken on this, I think that used to be a check station.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And there'd be people out, like, I mean, if you were at an outdoor shop or whatever, they'd have, like, you know, a big kettle of soup beans cooking out there or something like that, and people just hang out.
That's kind
of
awesome. And,
that is awesome.
And it's, I mean, even when Gander Mountain was a check station in Terre Haute, like, opening day of firearm season, people just go sit in the parking lot and wait for people to bring deer in.
Tailgating?
Yeah.
Man, let's bring check stations back.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
I'm in favor.
For sure.
We should vote them in. That'd be fun.
Just have one here and just have a bum fire going back.
That'd be awesome.
Out back all
I'd sign
times.
Us up for a check station.
Have a grill going.
Yeah.
That'd be cool, man.
I mean, you guys got short firearm seasons over here, so it'd be...
We could do it, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, in
kill
Indiana,
a deer, grab a brat.
I'll run
grilling
it.
Out.
I'll grill out.
Yeah. Old Snortwee Scotty can...
You'll come out?
Yeah.
You do that? Because you don't gun hunt, cool. So you could be here.
Tell everybody to get bent. Show off my own deer.
That's every a nice deer, but here's mine.
Well, talk about how they cheated by using a firearm.
Yeah.
Just did great about the check
compound.
Great. Glad to have you, Snortwee Scotty. Thanks for being here.
You're welcome.
Shad, thanks for doing this, man.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. Yeah,
always nice to have you in.
Always nice to see you.
Yeah.
It was good. You guys want to close out with anything?
Nope.
Love you, Shad.
Don't think we should have brought Snortwee Scotty here, but
yeah, yeah, I'm here. I'm real glad you made it.
I know.
All right. Let's get on with it. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. WC on DC. We appreciate you. Go shoot a giant. See? I keep forgetting.
Hey, guys. Back with another Giant Tracker segment here on WC on DC. And this is kind of a fun Giant Tracker segment. It got set up this past weekend when I was at the Lincoln, Nebraska show. Met Garrett there. What's up, man?
Not much, man. How's it going?
It's going good. Good to see you again. It's kind of funny. We chatted just a few days ago, and I'm like, you use DeerCast with this. You're like, yep. I'm like, all right, we got to do a segment on it because we talked earlier in the show, and you're like, yeah, I shot a pretty good deer this year. You're like, oh, cool. Yeah, that's awesome, man. And then I see you.
I shot a big one. I just, you know, you don't want to be like that guy. You know?
Right. Well, then I look over and I see you holding it like, I don't know, half hour later. I'm like, get over here. Like, this is not just a big one. It's an incredible deer. Right. So man, introduce yourself and talk about, you know, don't give specifics, but what state you're in and all that.
Right. Yeah. I'm in Missouri. Northern Missouri is about as specific as I'll get. And then, I farm for a living. We have a pretty good grow crop operation, and then I run a seed stock Angus operation. So we actually have our bull sale coming up in February. So we're crazy busy with calving and trying to get ready for bull sale and all that stuff. So
awesome.
That's just kind of that's what I do for a living, and then where I live, Northern Missouri.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Because when I met you, I'm like, oh, is this a Nebraska deer? Because we're at a show in Nebraska, but you were up there actually doing cattle business.
Yeah, I was putting out sale flyers. You know, I always make a loop north, loop south, and loop east and stuff like that. And I was like, you know what? I actually, it's like, it'll be neat. I've been wanting to go to that one. I can't go to the Classic this year because of a family like vacation deal. So I was like, you know what? That'd be cool to hit that one up. I'll just do my flyers that day. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, end up being a snowstorm, but it all worked out.
Awesome, man. So let's talk about this deer, man. I know you have the rack with you, and I held the rack in person, took some photo video with all overlay here. But
so the buck, we ended up counting him as, well, there's 26 points. Now, where things get iffy is I'm not an official scorer. Like, I can score a typical deer all day long. Mm-hmm. But there's enough little nooks and crannies and points coming off of points and the bases that we weren't really sure exactly how to score him. So my taxidermist and I kind of threw a green score on him, but we won't know the official score until it would be February 11th is the first day that he's certified to be eligible to score. Awesome. So he was a typical 7x7 when we first got the pictures of him. And as you can see, like those points just bang, bang, bang line up. He was just an awesome deer to chase. The first time I got a picture of him, he was the 10th picture in on that card in August. Mm. And I put the camera out in late July. And man, there's always good deer in that area. And it actually caught me off guard because the first couple of days, I was like, who is this absolute giant that showed up out of nowhere? Mm-hmm. And then it hit me one day on the farm. I was like, oh, this deer, I might have a picture of this deer in 2019. Mm-hmm. And so I pull up, you know, my old pictures that I have saved on my computer, and there he is. I think I sent you that picture. You can probably post it on the video.
Yeah.
Of him 19. He's got that tine that comes in, you know, that's very specific. He's got these two guards starting, and then he's got his eye guards. They were the dead giveaways for him, and he's already got six on this side in 2019.
I'm going to pull this up while you're talking because. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Definitely. So this is 2019 photo in August, right? Oh, right. Yeah. Without a doubt. Yeah. Same deer.
Yeah. Without a doubt. Those have started, and he's got his eye guards and, like I say, all the points on the side already. He's actually missing two points. Maybe hard to see. There's the tallest brow here. And I guess you'll have the other trail camera picture that before he lost them. And then he's got a tine here that's gone. That looks like it's got a story behind it that I have yet to hear.
But, yeah, we talked about that a bit at the show. It's like, did someone try poaching him and shoot part of his rack off? Because that's a weird spot to break a point off, like in a fight, and not break off something bigger.
Right. And the closer you look at it, I just can't see how it's not. I mean, in the first picture we have of that deer missing that G3 was the day after rifle season closed. Mm-hmm. So things kind of line up that he disappeared from our farm from October 17th until November 23rd.
That made you nervous, I bet.
Absolutely. In fact, I was doing a guy was going to do a magazine article or an online article, and I was talking to him about it. He goes, so you're pretty much rooting for this deer to win so that he can lose with you later. I was like, yes, I can't put it any better than that. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm
trying to do. That's the best way to explain it. So yep. What date did you shoot him on?
I shot him on December 10th. And then I recovered in the morning of the 11th.
Of this year?
Yeah.
I guess of 21, right?
Yeah. 2020.
You might have said, or did you have pictures of him in 20?
None. So 19, I get the best picture I have is the one I sent you. And then I have like three or four others that you can tell it's him, but they're kind of like he's moving by the camera, blurry, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's at a farm that I own 3/4 of a mile north of where I shot him. But then I also got some pictures of him on the farm I shot him on in 19. Mm-hmm. So then 20 rolls around and nothing. And since he wasn't a mature deer, it was just one of those deer that you're like, man, I really hope this guy lives. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't really thinking about him much. No pictures. Well, then after talking to the neighbor this summer, he was not very far away, like hundreds of yards away. They're getting pictures of this deer. He just wasn't particularly on our farm or else I didn't have the cameras, you know, in the right spot. So
because it's only telling what's in front of that one spot. So
right. But then 21 rolls around and he is blowing my camera up from basically the end of July through October 17th. He's on that thing a lot.
Yeah.
A lot. So
what was the game plan going in? I mean, what would you kill him with, a bow or gun or crossbow?
Yep, we got him with a bow, a Matthews bow. 48 yards was a shot. Which I shoot quite a bit of long distance in the summer, 100 yards, stuff like that. And I've shot a buck at 60 before. So I was really confident in that shot. But
yeah,
it's one of those things that where he was actually summering was one of those places where you wouldn't think a buck would live at all. Like he was just in the middle of nowhere. He had feed, water, and he had some clover. He had everything he wanted within about 200 yards. And he just didn't leave there. I saw him on the hoof in September, early September before the season started. And then a neighbor saw him and was like, hey man, that is the biggest deer I've ever seen in my life. And I was like, yeah, he's huge. Do you mind just like not telling anybody you saw that deer for a while?
Smart move. Did he hold a secret?
Yeah, he did. Props to the neighbor. Like anytime that I call Coyote Center shoot him, he does some fur bearing stuff. So I give him all pelts and things like that. So yeah. Yep.
Then you're going on within the neighbor that it sounds like. I mean, and that's the fear, you know, it's exciting to see deer like that. So you want to tell people, and then that, like, it's, I hate to say it this way, but deer like that can almost ruin an area and bring a lot of negative attention from people who aren't willing to follow the law.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, if that buck did get away from a poacher's bullet, I mean.
Right. That's just it. This deer has made his rounds in the county and multiple counties, and people that I didn't even know knew about the deer have talked to me about it. And so I know most of the people that hunt in that area, and no one's came forward and been like, yeah, I shot at that deer, like on the run or anything like that. Or, hey, I saw him sitting there and I shot at him. Like no one said anything. So
well, they're not going to now.
Yeah. I have a feeling that it was potentially something that shouldn't have been happening.
That's what it adds up to me as well. Yeah. So when you see this deer coming in the day that you shot him, I mean, how far was he when you first saw him, and then what was going through your head?
So that day I'd taken my old Ford truck into the Ford dealership, and a really good hunting buddy of mine works there. And I was like, okay, like DeerCast and my other weather apps say the wind's coming out of the northeast. It's a perfect wind for him. My neighbor to the south, which a pivotal part of this story is that my neighbor to the south and I created a great relationship over this deer. We'd always known who each other were, but we'd never shared deer pictures. We'd never, you know, strategized on deer. Mm-hmm. And he's a great dude that owns the property, bow hunts only. And we were both like, hey, we both hope that one of us gets him. Obviously we both hoped it was ourselves, but just, we hope that one of us gets this deer. Mm-hmm. And he actually texted me December 9th and said, hey, that buck's with a doe right on your property line. And so I had been waiting for the right wind, kind of been all season long. I had very strategically gone in there as far as the wind had to be perfect. The weather had to be right. Mm-hmm. You know, deer cast had to be on point, stuff like that. And so it was just one of those things where the stars kind of lined up. So when I'm talking to that guy at the Ford dealership, I'm like, actually, that wind's supposed to switch like 45 minutes before dark out of the northwest. Mm-hmm. So instead of going to my tree stand in the southwest corner of that field, I said, I'm going to sit on the ground on some pine trees that are on the edge of our field. Mm-hmm. That way I've got an exit strategy. Because if that wind slaps me in the back of the neck 45 minutes to dark, I'm bailing. I'm out.
Right, right. You know? And that's prime time. You don't want to have to get down then.
Exactly. And where the trail comes out of the bedding area and CRP onto our food source, I was like, I just can't risk it. Because if when you're in that corner, you're there till 30 minutes after dark, just trying to get out with all the deer in the field every night. It's one of the fields that gets a lot of deer in it. So I'm looking up, some does come out, I'm glassing, and all of a sudden there's about eight, ten does start popping over the hill from the east. But what's weird is they're already in the center of the field instead of coming out of like the timber and CRP. Mm-hmm. But they're also CRP to the east of this field. So they could have come from there.
Gotcha.
But it's not where they typically come from. And so I'm glassing, and all of a sudden I take my binos over, and boom, he's filling my binos. And I'm like, that's him. There he is. And so he's with this doe. And what was kind of funny watching him was he was running off other does. Like anytime any animal got next to that hot doe he was with, he was like, get back, you know, just stay away from him.
No kidding. And so he's out in the open with these does?
Yeah, he's in the wide open. So to preface that, like the reason that we only hunted great winds, and like during that month, I wasn't getting any pictures. We hunted down there like two or three times total because I wanted all the does to be concentrated on our farm for late season. Mm-hmm. We also flew on some cover crops. So we flew on turnips, radishes and rye on top of our standing cornfield in August. And that was in preps of, we do cover crop on hundreds of acres of corn every year anyways, but I kind of told Dad, like, we need to make darn sure we got turnips and radishes growing down there.
Right.
So that
right.
We got the winter feed. So that we don't get this deer harvested before then, we've got a great chance late season. We're the main food source there anyways, but I wanted green and grain at the same time.
Very smart.
So, yeah. And so it all kind of came together.
So you got lack of pressure. The food is there.
Yes.
You're using DeerCast to know when to go. You're conscious of your wind. You're conscious of wind changes.
Absolutely.
And the reason why I'm listing this stuff off is that way, this isn't a coincidence. This is more of a calculated move probably than you'll even give yourself the credit, but
right,
you know, and I always say big bucks take effort, and all your effort right now is lining up, which is why this right. deer's in the open.
Yes.
In daylight.
And in the open for most deer I've shot, like everyone, has been a fairly quick scenario. This deer came out and was in the field for 45 minutes from the time I saw him to the time I released the arrow. It was 45 minute stretch.
So he wasn't out there and then trying to get the heck out of there fast.
No, you know? they were just feeding from the east to the west toward me, and they were feeding on, like, you know, that cover crop and probably finding an ear of corn here or there or something that didn't make it in the combine. And the other does, so it ended up being about 12 does in the field besides he and the doe he's with. Mm-hmm. And he and the doe actually bedded down at somewhere right around 100 yards. No, so they came out, he was at like 160 moving toward me, and then they bed down at around 100. And it's like probably still 40 minutes to dark. And I'm like, please stand up.
Oh, man. Like, the clock's ticking at that point.
Right. Yeah. I'm like thinking about throwing some grunts out, but I got these other does that have continued to feed to the west. So like, I can't do much. I'm on the ground. Like, I just got to just hope. And so then they actually only bedded down for about 5 minutes, stood up. And then once they kind of broke that, they milled around there eating from 100 to 90 yards for quite a while. And then once they broke that like 90, 85 yard mark, they just pretty much like just started walking. And like, so there were does kind of above me on the hill, and these two were still below me, and they just kind of started angling toward me. Mm-hmm. And when they hit that 60 yard mark, which is where I'm comfortable shooting, I was like, that's when things got pretty real, that like this is going to come together, because they're still just beelining toward me. Mm-hmm. So I'm behind this pine tree, and I'm like, okay, it looks like deer up on the hill. They're kind of angling up the hill. They're going to come right to left, and then I'm gonna have my shot here.
Yeah.
And then he didn't want her by those other does, and so he actually worked up the hill on her and kind of pressured her to go back down the hill a little bit. Mm-hmm. So then kind of luckily I like cleaned all the leaves and stuff out from underneath my feet prior, and I just kind of turned my body. When she came out, I had my rangefinder right here on a tether.
Yeah.
And I hit her and she was at 48. So I turned my dial on my single pin, and then I just assumed like, surely he's going to be right there. You know,
yeah.
I didn't know the range in him specifically. And so then right about the time I got my deal down, got my hand back on my release, he was just poking out of that pine tree coming up behind her. I drew back and let her rip, baby.
Hammered him?
No. No, I thought I hit him better than I did.
Yeah.
48 for me is a pretty, I mean, I can shoot a couple inch group at 48 pretty easy every day. And so I was really confident in that shot.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked to me like it hit low and maybe a little bit back. What I didn't realize is that I think the deer was angled harder than I had given him credit for.
Mm-hmm.
And because the arrow actually came out, so he's working left to right, and the arrow came out on the back side of his front leg. It like cut the meat on the back side of his front leg.
Gotcha. Okay.
I felt really good about the hit, and then he's running off. I was like, it was a touch low, but it's kind of in that wheelhouse. So he runs straight back to the east, kind of the other does, they kind of jog off, doe he's with, kind of they basically, they run up to about, I don't know, 150, 200 yards up on the hill. Mm-hmm. And he runs out to like 150-ish and stops. And he's right at where that hill will break over where I can't see him if he goes farther. Mm-hmm. And he's standing there and just vigorously shaking his tail. And he's kind of got that hump, like that hunchback look.
Yep.
And I've got a really bad experience on an Iowa hunt about 5 years ago. I lost about a 180 that reacted the same way.
Mm, yeah.
So I was like, man, it instantly, like, I was excited, but doubt kind of set in. So it was a pass through. I was able to get out there right at, you know, maybe right before dark, and I found the arrow. Basically, I crawled out to the arrow.
Right, right.
It was up on top of the hill, and they started back east after they all kind of ran off. And so that was an experience in, like, you know, you feel awesome, and at the same time, you don't. So mm-hmm. I started, like, texting, Snapchatting buddies, like, hey, I got an arrow in him. I text my neighbor to the south, like, hey, I've got an arrow in him. And so then we actually started talking about the reaction. And I look up on DeerCast and it says, you know, hey, it's like one was like a 5 to 8 hour wait.
Yeah, DeerCast track is what you're referencing.
Yeah, DeerCast track. So the next one was like 12 to 15 hours, depending on, I used a couple different versions and kind of moved the deer's body around a little bit.
Yeah.
And then my neighbor texts me and he's like, hey, And I see on Google that like something with a really fast flickering tail says liver hit 12 to 18 hours or something. I was like, oh my gosh. So basically I knew right then to back out.
Yeah.
I didn't feel good about it because that place is loaded with coyotes.
Like, yeah.
So I was like, but I actually woke up at 1 a.m. and started over there. And I was like, nope. Get the heck out of here.
Yeah. Doing that internal battle with yourself. Yeah. I mean, anybody else would be doing the same thing.
I actually drove halfway to the farm and then turned around at 1 a.m. and came back home.
You did.
I wasn't sleeping anyways. So I was like,
I'd probably been doing the same thing, man. I don't think anybody else could blame you for that.
Right. So, dad is my main man. I mean, he's the one that I do all my hunting stuff with, and he was on vacation in Tennessee. So that kind of sucked that I had to call him instead of like having him come join me. But the deer had actually only gone like 80 more yards over the hill and died right there.
Awesome.
So I don't know when he died. I wish I'd maybe gone in at 1 o'clock or something, because the coyotes got into him pretty good.
That's just something that happens. We had a recent experience with Austin Chandler's buck, that big drop time buck that we had I showed on another giant tracker segment, and coyotes overnight ate that thing, ate its nodes off, ate its ear off. It's just that's just how it is sometimes. So, man,
was that the one that kind of got the bad publicity?
Yep, that was it.
It was weird. Like, I don't remember when I listened to that podcast, but I listened to it and I didn't watch it. But when I listened, that was 2-4 days after I recovered this one.
You know what? That Austin shot that buck, I believe on, I don't remember the exact date, between the 6th and the 9th, he shot that buck of December. So it was real close to when you shot yours.
So I was I tried my hardest to make sure like all my pictures are from one side of that deer. Mm-hmm. And like, there's no rear end of the deer in any of the pictures, because I was trying to hide all that. Well, I didn't know what you guys talked about on that podcast. So it was just like perfect timing that I did that. And I didn't know if I should show it or not. And then I listened to that podcast. I'm like, I'm really glad I worked really hard to get all my pictures with no coyote damage in them after listening to that deal. So,
well, and the thing is, we had the pictures, we had clean pictures, and we had the other pictures that showed the honest situation, but we knew if we would have posted a picture of Austin holding a skull cap of this 190 inch buck, first thing that's going to red flag is someone be like, well, there's something shady that happened with that one.
Right.
So we kind of thought it was a lose-lose no matter what. So we were better to show what honestly happened in the way just tooth, fang, and claw Mother Nature is. It's just coyotes got to eat too. Unfortunately, they're not our best friends as deer hunters, but
they are.
Can you blame them? I mean, what the heck?
No, I mean, they wouldn't have cared if it was a 200 or if it was a tiny little yearling doe. They wouldn't have cared.
Exactly.
It was meat for them. So it was one of those deals that you don't feel good about finding your deer that way, but I still feel like with the information I had, it was the right decision, and I'm going to live with it. And that's just how I feel about it. So
you made the right decision, man. It's just, what do you do? There's really nothing you can do about that. That's part of the game. Because the risk is you go in trudging over the hill and he's bedded there and he gets up and runs 5 miles and then gets eaten by coyotes anyway, and you don't get anything off of him. And then it's just a lost cause even more.
Yeah, we're the food source. And if I jumped him, I was like, I'm surrounded by CRP, really thick ditches. Like, it's going to be tough to find this deer in 6 foot tall, 200 some acres of CRP.
Yeah.
I just need to get out of here and leave this thing alone.
So
it all worked out in the end. Like I say, it's not the perfect scenario, but I feel good about it. Now, I still know I made the right decision based on like deer cast, talking to the neighbor, watching that deer walk over that hill after he stood there for like a couple minutes, like say with his tail shaking and hunchbacked. Cause that's what that 180 did in Iowa. He stood at like 150, 200 yards, and he stood there for probably a better part of 10 minutes. And he ended up walking off. He ended up walking hundreds of yards, and then I didn't recover him. I actually jumped him out of his bed 9 hours later. So it's one of those deals that pretty fresh in my mind. Like,
I can imagine. That one still
stings, so this one would probably sting even a little bit worse. So.
Yeah, it would. It would have. Yeah. What was your reaction when you picked the rack up? Was he bigger than you thought, or about what you thought he was?
Way more massive than I thought. When you get into how, like, when you held it, you remember how heavy it was?
Yeah.
Like frame wise, I've shot some really framey deer, big deer. Mm. The frame on this one isn't anything overly impressive. There's just so many points. The mass carries great all throughout. Had that tine not been broke off, that was a little bit palmated there, mm-hmm. he'd have had two, like right at 7-inch mass measurements. And so it's just crazy. Like his fourth mass measurement out here was 5 7/8.
Wow.
And so it's just kind of crazy that, I mean, this one here was only about 5 1/2 or 5 3/8. I can't remember exactly, but
what did he green score at?
So the taxidermist and I did him at 218. And like, we didn't count this one because we could only get 7/8 out of this little point, this mm-hmm. little cave here. That one we could only get 7/8, so we didn't count those. So that's our best guess. So please, whenever people listen to this and the official score comes out at either, like, you know, a gross of 215 or 220.
Yeah.
You know,
it's just the way it is. I mean, that there, Dustin Huffbuck
with all of this junk that's down in here, because he's got that,
a, it gets like, confusing.
Character and stuff in there. So,
well, don't feel bad if it does, because I think people, that's just how it is sometimes. Dustin Huffbuck, that big typical that was shot in Indiana, I think it netted bigger than he, because when I interviewed him, I think he was right around 206, 207 net is what he was thinking. And then they did a panel score on it, came out at like 211, I believe. I might be a little off on that, but it grew. I mean, it's tough. Anytime you get into those big, crazy monster deer like that, it's hard telling what they're going to go.
Yep. No, I was wanting to, you know, people from Missouri, we don't give people compliments. We give them a hard time. And that's how you know that we like it. And I was going to give Mark and Terry a hard time because, you know, DeerCast said bad that day. But what DeerCast can't account for is a hot doe, right? And so even though it's like super accurate, I love using the app, you know, I got to give them a hard time. DeerCast said bad, and I shot a buck of a lifetime. So
I love it.
We got to add that to the algorithm. We got to add a hot doe on every farm to the algorithm. You know?
Right. Well, that's, you know, they have the DeerCast custom, but I think it's funny because you see people talk about DeerCast in some of these like forums, even our Working Class Bowhunters group on Facebook. You know, I think people expect Mark and Terry to predict every time a yearling doe is up on their property. Right. Yeah. And then I made a joke. I'm like, well, you want them to predict all this stuff for an app that cost you little or no money for a year. Right. You get the full Drury Outdoors library. You get this amazing podcast included in that. But then, you know, it's like, and then you got to factor in like, okay, all your sloppy hunting tactics that you put on your hunting ground, you want Mark and Terry to filter through that too? I mean, if you want to start complaining about every time you see a yearling doe that it said bad on DeerCast, we can break it down even farther and see how many times you hunted the wrong wind on a certain stand. And then we'll talk and see who's really messing up here, which is funny, but all good fun.
So many people that don't even use the terrain when they walk in or anything, they just walk right over the top of the hill to a tree stand. Then they wonder why, you know, they don't see many deer, like say they don't pay attention to wind. And so much stuff goes into, like, say you, it still takes so much luck to kill. Like, I've killed quite a few big deer. It still takes luck. That deer has to decide to come by you, but you still have to put in all the prior points to sway that pendulum to your side as much as you can. You'll never have control of it, and we don't want control of it. That isn't the point of it. But you've got to do as many things as you can, like say the cover crop and the, like twice I went in the pouring rain and checked trail cameras on this deer because I just didn't want any scent left. Mm-hmm. My dad was like, "You've lost your mind. Like this deer's gotten to you." I'm like, "No, I'm just trying to be extra cautious on this one, you know, just to
what it keep takes. Him around,
you know." So
that's what makes the difference between someone that's consistent with their success. And that doesn't mean a big buck every year, because like you said, it takes a lot of luck. Sometimes it's just the luck's not there. You can do everything right.
You know, when you're chasing 160 pluses, you're not going to get one every year.
No. But
if you're devoted to saying, hey, you know, I'm willing to eat a tag sandwich if I don't get one of these two deer I'm after, then that's what it is, you know.
Well, that goes to show the effort to big bucks shows versus the guys who just want to comment must be nice on the guys who kill the big bucks.
After they posted the Field and Stream article on that online, the must be nice has started coming through, you know.
Yeah.
And kudos to some, I wasn't going to comment anything, but kudos to the people that were trying to stand up for me. Like, you know, like somebody says, you know, high fence deer, and somebody wrote like, yeah, three foot barbed wire fence on a her privately owned farm. I was like, kudos to that guy.
Yeah.
Just cheers to you on the next Bush Light you drink, right?
Yeah, so. Exactly. The guys that make those comments, we know we've been talking about a lot lately. We've gotten more of that lately too. Just, I guess, I don't know, just because we're in more places now. But yeah, when Austin shot that buck, it was like, the must be nice guys. Shoots up. He's hunting in a zoo. It's like, okay, whatever, guys. Must be.
Somebody comment, how much did that deer cost? I'm like, honestly, you don't want to know. It did cost me quite a bit, but I didn't pay anybody specifically for it. So,
big deer costs a lot of money, especially the probably more money with the ones without an ear tag because all the effort. And I mean, it takes that's effort.
Right. You know,
from the food plots to the whatever. It's
money. A sickness. Anybody that shoots big deer, it's a sickness. I mean, this deer is actually, I've gotten so many comments about, you know, so you done hunting now? I'm like, no, this has fueled me probably more than ever. I've always done late December, early January, like spotting scope scouting, as far as whether I have a tag to fill still or just trying to get inventory for next year. Mm-hmm. I've done more of that this year than I ever have. I've probably shot my bow 13, 14 times since I shot him out in the cold wind in January in Missouri. Yeah. Like I grabbed one of those tethered systems the other day because I'm really interested in trying to get into that saddle deal. So it's just, I've done more prep for next year already than I do most years after shooting him. There's just something that's always been different about those big deer. They just don't act like other deer. And it's something that's so much fun to do.
Yeah.
So
I can see that, man. I think I would be the same way. You shoot something crazy like that. Cause you know, the likelihood of you shooting another one like that are pretty slim. But doesn't mean that you can't target mature bucks, whether they're 140 or whatever they end up being.
Absolutely. We're fortunate in an area that I'm fortunate to farm. So I have quite a big ground that I have private access to that dad and I bow hunt. My oldest brother rifle hunts a little bit, but he still plays the wind right just through having to listen to dad and I preach to him all the time, you know.
Yeah.
But it's just a lot of fun to just do all the stuff and do all the work to try and get those big deer in there. But my biggest one prior to him was a 191. I got him with a bow on December 21st, 8 years ago. Last year I shot a 169 on January 2nd or 3rd, something like that. So late season is my go-to.
Sounds like it, man.
Love late season.
Well, so, we'll have to get you in and do a regular WCB podcast in the studio here when you're on a cattle tour. Yeah, and we'll talk late season stuff. But I appreciate you jumping on pretty short notice. And it was cool meeting you and getting to hold the actual buck and all that. So,
yeah. Yep. Hey, well, I appreciate your time, man. We love the podcast.
Thanks.
Like I said, it gives us guys that are just have a sickness over something to listen to. And it's a little more bro talk, you know, it's a little more relaxed. And that's what I love about it. I will say to the listeners, if you come to the booth with a giant buck, you still don't get a free t-shirt. all the listeners know that.
Call me out.
I think he gave me like a 2-cent sticker. He's like, hey, would you like to get a sticker? Oh, thanks.
Here, put this on your truck. That's what happens when you go to do this for a living. You got to squeeze every cent you can out of it so you can buy lunch when you get back to work.
No, I for sure bought a couple of t-shirts in support. I did not want them free. I just, like I said, Missouri people are going to give you a hard time. We're not going to compliment you much. So, you know, that was my way.
We'll take it. We're used to getting crap on job sites. We know.
I don't doubt that.
All good salt here.
People right there, man.
Yeah, that's right, man. That's right. Well, hey, man, thank you so much. If you want to plug your Instagram or anything before you leave, feel free.
Yeah, I had to write it down because I couldn't remember what it was. gwood_46. And then, anybody interested in a bull in February, visit our website, www.ccacattle.com, man.
Love it. Love it. Support the working man right there. That's pretty awesome.
That's right.
All right, buddy. We'll get to you next year. Hey, if you kill a 200 plus next year, I'll send you a free t-shirt.
Awesome. Deal.
All right, buddy. All right, man. Appreciate you. Later, man. You.